On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap the weekend. We talk about the one sweep that occurred, the Padres taking all three from the Pirates. We discuss what it means when the general manager speaks to the media early on in the season. Is that good news or bad news? Then we throw it into turbo mode and recap every series from the weekend. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't care about 100 men versus one gorilla. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and we care about 100 men versus one Pete Putilla.
This is going to be a fun episode of Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz is in Miami, Florida. I am back home from Boston, Massachusetts, where I will be reporting my findings on these perfectly mid-Boston Red Sox. You saw a little bit of Yankees-Rays. We only had one sweep this weekend, which we will start with, because that's what you get when you win all your baseball games over the weekend. We have plenty else to talk about, but no, we are not going to talk about 100 men versus one gorilla. Although now that you mention it, okay, never mind. Let's get Putilla. To the baseball.
Putilla. Pete Putilla, I want to know, could what former Giants
he up to?
General manager Pete Putilla stave off 100 men? Probably not.
I will say, I am surprised
he couldn't even stave off Buster Posey.
No, right. That makes me feel not great about his chances. Well, it's kind of amazing we don't have a minor league team named the Gorillas. That feels kind of improbable. But hey, you know, it's almost too normal for what we kind of name minor league teams at this point.
That is so true.
Maybe if we get back to just more of a standard naming, format, then we will end up with the Gorillas.
I want to paint a picture for you as we hop into how sweep it is. San Diego Padres on Sunday before their game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I heard this following story is true. They got together in the clubhouse. They held a team meeting and they said, gents, we need to be mentioned first on Monday's episode of Baseball Barbacast. They rallied around. They agreed. They love the show. Every Padre. All of them. All 26 of them. Mike Schilt, too. He said, guys, this is important. And they backed it up, and they won on Sunday, being the only team this weekend to earn a sweep. I'm not exactly sure who they beat in the series because I'm not allowed to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, to me, I think it was really a response to a week ago when we began this show talking about the Padres being swept at home by the Tampa Bay Rays. And at that point, we were like, Padres, this is not how we normally, you know, talk about you. And I think Mike Schilt was embarrassed. He heard us talking about them a week ago because, of course, again, everybody on the Padres listens to the show, and they were just like, guys, we're better than this. This is an opportunity. Sunday morning in particular, right? You won the first two. You said, it's right there. It's right there for us to be the first topic. And not only did they make it happen, the seas parted. Everybody else failed to sweep. And now here we are celebrating these dads winning three games against a very not good baseball team in Pittsburgh.
Mazel tov, as it says. I still have myriad concerns about the San Diego Padres offense and whether the bottom of that lineup can win a World Series. I think it is one of the weaker, like, micro units of any contender in baseball, that in a playoff series, if you just pitch carefully around the top of the order, you can stroll through the bottom. You know, when pitchers talk about, like, the 2022 Braves, right, or the Dodgers at points last year, they'll say things like, there's no let up in the lineup. Like, you got to lock in for every guy. The Padres are the opposite. They're like, there's some let up.
So
you can coast.
Yeah. Now, if you're struggling to get Gavin Sheets out, I know he finally hit another home run over the weekend after really cooling off after those first couple weeks, then it's not great. You know, if you're letting those bottom hitters reach base and then here comes Tatis and friends, that's no bueno. At the same time, the other key for this Padres team is that Jackson Merrill, who's one of the best players in the world, has not been playing. He is expected to return this week, which is a huge deal and great timing, as the Padres continue a road trip that includes now trips to the Bronx, which I guess you will not be there to see the Padres in New York, but then they go to Colorado. So a pretty hilarious Pirates to Yankees to Rockies is probably some whiplash from a competition level standpoint for the Padres, but we will see how they handle themselves against the Yankees. But getting Merrill back cannot be, it's just huge. A massive deal. Huge. I mean, he is one of the best players in baseball. And even if you're adding one more guy to deal with, that's a pretty big guy. And remember how well he looked. I mean, he was cooking early. He looked fantastic to start the season. If he can pick up where he left off, like that's, you're adding an all-star right back into the mix.
And I know Elias Diaz went yard in the finale, but here is the Padres lineup from yesterday.
Yeah.
Tatis, Luis Arraez, Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts, top four. Pretty good. Bogaerts has looked a little bit better, maybe. Luis Camposano, DH in the five spot. Oscar Gonzalez, left field in the six hole. Yep. Jose Iglesias, Elias Diaz, Brandon Lockridge.
Yeah. So Yuli Gurriel's finally gone. He has been DFA'd. But no. You're still. That's terrible news. Oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot. RIP, your bold prediction that. What was it that he was going to homer against someone half his age?
Against a pitcher that was born after he began his professional career.
Well, hey, he might still have a chance. More on the Boston Red Sox first base situation in a few minutes. Totally point said, but we've made this point about the Padres. If we're going to talk about the Padres in this podcast, I want to talk about their pitching. Because I think this is really what is more compelling. We've made the same point. Oh, look at all these NRIs in the lineup. Look at all these AAA guys. I think the pitching staff is far more compelling, some for good and some for troublesome. So let's get into that. I think there's two characters we need to introduce. I'm not sure if we've said really either of their names much on this podcast.
Like to zoom out. The Padres have the lowest team ERA in baseball.
Right. How about that?
They are ahead of the Mets. 2.75 ERA as a team.
Uh-huh.
Their rotation ERA is higher. It is 3.52.
Like eighth, I think.
It's eighth.
Yeah.
But their bullpen ERA is a 1.73. How sustainable is that? Not sustainable.
Well,
still, to get that low, you have to be legitimately good.
So then let's actually start with the bullpen, right? Because maybe it's not going to be that low all season, but if they finish first, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, this was the unit that even letting Tanner Scott, head over to the Dodgers, this still looked like one of the best units in the league. And why is that? Okay, so Robert Suarez, I think by this point people understand, is one of the best closers in the league. He is a unique closer in that he doesn't really have a breaking ball. He is just he throws two different kinds of fastballs and a gnarly changeup, and he throws really hard. And he throws a lot of strikes. So that is a good recipe for success when, things are going well. Now, sometimes you'll be liable to hang one and allow some backbreaking home runs. But for the most part, he has been just tremendous. So Robert Suarez, I think by this point, people understand is one of the best closers in baseball. But they got some other nasty stuff going on in there. Jason Adam has been marvelous since they acquired him. And a big part of acquiring him, too, and why they paid, a pretty significant price to get him from Tampa was a multi-year situation. Tanner Scott was a rental. Jason Adam, they knew they were going to have him for this year. He's continued to be good. Jeremiah Estrada kind of had his breakout last season. Just a fantastic fastball, both velocity and shape. He's got 24 strikeouts in 16 innings with only four walks, which is really impressive. And then you got some other funky guys, right? Like Alec Jacob and Yuki Matsui is just kind of an unusual look. And then Mora Hone, I got to say, man, Morahone, I had really started to write off. This is someone who got a lot of money when he signed out of Cuba, almost 10 years ago now. It just never really worked as a starter. But when you're a lefty that can throw that hard, it's not surprising that they've managed to turn him also into an awesome reliever, which from like a stuff standpoint is a nice compliment to the not as stuffy Wandy Peralta and Yuki Matsui's from the left-handed side. So it's a very complete bullpen. It's a very impressive group. And maybe they don't have a 2 ERA all season, but I think it's one of the best groups in the league, and I think they'll continue to lean on that.
They have allowed 24 runs this year as a unit.
Man.
Five pitchers in baseball have allowed more than that.
I mean, dude, the Nationals bullpen's allowing 24 runs.
Way more than that. I apologize. I had to take off a qualifier.
Yeah.
Herman Marquez has allowed 33 runs. Charlie Morton has allowed 30. Tanner Houck, 26. Eduardo Rodriguez, 25. Padres bullpen in 3x the innings total, 24. 24 runs as a unit is just unbelievable. Let's move to the rotation. What's been
going
well?
This is where it's more of a conversation about same kind of thing with the lineup, where it's like, damn, like this top group here, and Dylan Cease hasn't even really been that good.
Has not been good.
You know, he's still striking out a lot of guys, but the ERA, I mean, his FIP's 2 runs lower than his ERA. He had one horrific outing in Sacramento, but he has been, yes, on the whole, relatively disappointing. Nick Pivetta, marvelous. I mean, this is going about as well as you could expect or as hope. I was very bullish on it, but he has just been outstanding. He's pitching against the Yankees on Monday night, so we'll see how that goes. Big matchup for him, but he has just been tremendous. A guy they didn't add until, what was it, mid-February?
Yeah, and I haven't heard from Dick Pivetta in years.
Dick Pivetta has not been making a difference.
No.
He still is, like, in his with personal his family. Life, like, with family. I'm sure that's true. I don't want to speak to that. But Nick Pivetta has, the status has been raised, right? More people have learned about Nick Pivetta recently. And so he's trending in the right direction.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we had a very long conversation in the offseason about pitcher Nick Pivetta versus former NBA referee Dick Pivetta and who has a higher fame rating. And I would imagine that, you know, like, Grandpa Dick Pivetta is, you know,
he might be a great grandfather. I mean, I don't know about the
family. He's certainly a great grandfather.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's 85. So, I mean, he's, you know, anyway. So, but Nick Pivetta doing well. Michael King, just, I mean, exactly. Remember, he was one of kind of the breakout stars of the postseason last year. Had a great regular season too, but he just,
King
you know, keep on keeping on and, we'll talk about another part of the Juan Soto trade here in a second, but that is just, it's an incredible ad. That is a thing that is still paying massive dividends. And of course, someone that, along with Dylan Cease, is probably going to make a lot of money this winter, whether it's in San Diego or elsewhere. So Michael King, marvelous.
Let's zoom in on a player that fills my heart with glee. One of the most unique pitchers in the game today. I would even maybe describe him, and this is perhaps rude to Luis Arraez, but the pitching Luis Arraez, it's more like the pitching David Fletcher, right? In a way,
it's a one of one situation, I guess, is the point. I don't really know if calling him Arraez is complimentary, or I mean, they're teammates, I guess. Maybe who knows if they get along. Yeah.
Randy Vasquez, this MF-er Randy. Who is Randy Vasquez? Randy Vasquez was in the Soto trade.
Went from
the Nueva York Yankees to the San Diego Padres. Where in the world is Carmen Randy Vasquez? Now, Randy Vasquez is unique for the following reason. In today's world of baseball, pitchers are doing what more than ever? Jordan?
They're striking guys out. They're getting whips, baby.
Yeah. Grab some pine meat. Doors. Thanks for coming out. Randy Vasquez, however, is not doing that. He is currently running an 8.8% strikeout rate. So 8.8% of hitters, he is striking them out. The last qualified starter to have a strikeout rate under 9 for an entire season was LeVon Hernandez.
Oh, baby.
In 2008. Oh, okay, so think about all the things that have changed in our lives and in baseball since 2008. And what Randy Vasquez is attempting to do right now is...
Well, hold on. Let's be clear.
Attempting is maybe not... attempting, yeah, maybe he is trying to strike people out. What Randy Vasquez is in danger of accomplishing is striking out hitters at such a low clip that he could equal LeVon Hernandez's. steps.
But now, it's even weirder than that. That doesn't even do it justice.
That's just the first half. Okay? Randy Vasquez, in your brain, doesn't strike people out. So if I said to you, smart baseball listener, guy who doesn't strike anybody out, what are they good at? Oh, well, they never walk anybody, right? Like,
right.
They're like,
you get a
Kyle
ton of
Hendricks.
Ground balls, right? They're pitching in contact. Like, it's part of the strategy. Like, they're not trying to pretend something that they're not, right? That's got to be what's happening here, surely.
Not this guy. Not this guy. He also walks a ton of hitters. He has
everybody. He has the most walks in baseball.
So that seems like it would be a recipe for disaster and not a recipe for a sensational outing on Saturday against the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I mean, he's done a version of this already a few times this season. But this is why this is so astonishing. Like, okay, so his ERA is 3.9. Somehow. The only thing he seems to be doing well is he is mostly avoiding hard contact, and he has only allowed one home run. Now, part of that, this is like, well, yeah, because nobody knows where the ball's going to go, and so how are they supposed to square anything up? This is like textbook effectively wild. But this feels generous to call this effective when there's just no way that this is the plan, is to walk double the number of hitters that you're striking out.
He doesn't throw hard. His cutter, which is his most frequently used pitch, averages 90.2.
Yeah.
But yet he has no idea where it's going, and yet no one is able to really square him up. For context on the strikeout to walk stuff, his strikeout to walk rate right now is -7. -7. He is the only qualified starter in the negatives. That means, right, more walks than strikeouts.
Yeah.
-7. He is walking more dudes than he is striking out. And they're running him out there, and he's just getting outs. Randy Vasquez is daredevil.
Again, it's so perplexing, though, because the reason he even became a prospect with the Yankees is because he was striking dudes out. You look at his minor league numbers. 130 strikeouts and 107 innings of 21. 120 and 115 and 22. Like, he had stuff that was working, that was missing bats. And what is even stranger is that his lack of strikeouts was a problem last year. He had the lowest strikeout rate in baseball of all pitchers with 90 innings. So that was already an issue. What has changed is that he wasn't walking that many guys last year. So now he's gotten even worse at the strikeouts, even worse at the walks. He's changed his pitch mix completely, which you can imagine after last year, Ruben Niebla was like, we got to do something different. Something. And he's doing something different, and his ERA is lower, and his peripherals are some of the worst that we've ever seen. So anyway, the reason we're talking about him is because he continues to make starts for the San Diego Padres, which we cannot imagine would be happening in most other situations, but such is the nature of the Padres' depth chart. Now, maybe they do believe that, as ugly as these peripherals are, there is a good pitcher in here. He is someone that we can turn into someone that we can trust. Obviously, this version of him, you would never want to give him the ball in a postseason game, let alone in a postseason anything, right? But it's like, oh, we'll move into the bullpen. They don't need a reliever. That's the thing. It's not like, oh, put Randy Vasquez in the bullpen. There's no point in doing that. He's starting there because Yu Darvish is still injured and Joe Musgrove is out for the year. And their depth in the minors has essentially been traded away over the last few years. There's like no obvious guys that they can go to. We can get to another one here in a second, but it is an incredible, almost experiment that no other team would be giving him the opportunity to do.
That's the other thing, right? Is that he has runway that is unique and completely reliant. Well, I also think that they got him in the Soto trade. It's like, well, we got to see if this works. Like, well,
whatever. Michael King is like with the Cy Young. Who cares what Randy Vasquez? And by the way, Johnny Brito is another pitcher they got who I guess is injured. I thought Brito was going to be better. He hasn't really been. If he was healthy, maybe he's getting these starts.
My plea to you, the listener, is the following. We talk so often about crafting your baseball watching schedule around starters, right? And when we do that, we're talking about Paul Skeens or Yoshinobu Yamamoto. You know, pull up a chair, watch Hunter Green. Sink your teeth into that start. I would recommend to do the same with Randy Vasquez because you're going to see some defense. You know, you're going to see some base runners. You're going to see some action. Stuff's going to happen. So next Randy Vasquez start, if you threw Saturday, I imagine that it'll be in Colorado.
Oh, geez. Whew. But again, Rockies hitters stink, so maybe he'll carve. Just throw it over, Randy. What's the worst that can happen?
Oh,
man, oh, man. Okay, but the other guy that showed up this weekend is Stephen Kolek. Now, Stephen Kolek was someone who looked good in spring. He's the younger brother of former number two overall pick Tyler Kolek, who never even sniffed the major leagues. But here comes Stephen Kolek, who's bounced around a few different organizations and now looks like maybe a competent option for them. But this is really what is just something to monitor with this Padres rotation is who is getting starts beyond that top three. If all goes well, King Pivetta Cease will stay healthy, will continue to dominate. You're in good shape if you can get to the postseason. But, you know, Kyle Hart, who they signed from Korea, lefty who has generally been getting crushed. I know they sent him down, called him back up, had some injuries. Is that an option? Who knows? But guys who are starting for the Padres on not those top 3 days are compelling for better or for worse. I'm sure Padres fans are a little exhausted trying to figure it out. If they could just, you know, get the lead to the fourth or fifth inning, the bullpen could take it the rest of the way. But a lot of the times that has not been happening for these pitchers. Anyway, the Padres, what a strange club. But I think they're pretty good. I'm still riding with them. It's a very top heavy roster, but I think they are pretty good.
I just love them in comparison to the Dodgers, where it's just an outrageous amount of depth, like unnecessary depth. I understand right. The Dodgers pitching has continued to kind of fray away. And
yeah,
Justin Robleski is going to start game two of a playoff series, I'm sure.
Sure.
But still, like the comparison of it is just, it's just great. Enough about the Padres. I was going to talk about the Pirates. I have started to watch post-game shows on MLB TV for teams that stink to see how they're discussed on the post-game show. I'm very interested in this. Friend of the program, Stephen Brault, was
on the post-game,
former big leaguer for the Pirates post-game show. And he did a great job, but I actually just think that it's so simple. He was talking about the way that their approaches are for the offense. And like, they don't have good hitters.
Yep.
That's it. I'm not like trying to throw shade on Steve, but like it's, and obviously he can't say that.
No.
He can kind of say that the way we can. The Pirates do not have enough good hitters. And if you're going to tell me that Spencer Horwitz is Superman here to save the day, well, then I have a Oceanside property in Kansas to sell.
Maybe he is. We still haven't seen him because he's still recovering from wrist surgery that they maybe did or didn't know that he was going to have when they traded for him.
Whatever.
Anyway, Pirates are bad.
Jordan, a new segment that I'm going to call With Thine Own Eyes.
Oh, okay.
We like watching baseball.
That's great. True.
Good sport. True. Love this sport. You saw some of it in person with your eyeballs. Tell me about it. What do you see?
So, yes, we're going to talk about here some of the ball we saw IRL. I was in Boston visiting my sister, and I decided to cram in a lot of baseball along the way. That included the Boston Red Sox and the Minnesota Twins on Friday and Saturday evening. That included some college baseball. Ooh. Saw a little D3 action on Thursday, saw a little D1 action on Sunday, but I'm here to talk about the Red Sox because most people listening to this do not care about the UMass Boston Beacons, sadly.
I do.
The Red Sox are very perplexing, but let's talk about, honestly, like, as for how this series went, the Twins won the series, which was good for them because they're, you know, slowly trying to dig their way out of a very slow start. The Red Sox won on Friday with the ominous cloud of Tristan Casas' season-ending injury, which we'll dig into here in a second. And then the Twins just kind of hang on Saturday and Sunday. The Red Sox bullpen, not fantastic. Cody Clemens, who was on the Twins, hit a home run in his first game at Fenway. Roger Clemens was there. Roger Clemens did a little media session in the press box on Saturday, which was fascinating. And I don't have time to really to get into, but it was really interesting.
You ask anything? Just
Roger Clemens. Yeah, I asked him about Texas because he's down in Texas all the time. And he had some funny lines
like
about
the state?
Texas Longhorns baseball.
Okay, you got to specify. Could have been the Texas Rangers. Could have been like a...
Why would I ask him about Texas Rangers? He was wearing a gigantic Texas ring. It was like, I'm, you know, hook 'em, baby.
Okay.
But he was a... Yeah. Clemens is an interesting character. But anyway, let's focus on the Red Sox. And then on Sunday, Garrett Crochet was great. Red Sox bullpen blows it. Yoan Duran kind of slams the door both on Saturday and Sunday, get the Twins some much-needed victories. The Red Sox are 4-9 in one-run games. That is the most one-run losses in baseball. The Twins improved to 3-6 one-run games. They were 1-6 going into the weekend. Let's talk about this injury to Tristan Casas. So the first thing is, like, witnessing any season-ending injury is terrible, and this was no different. It was one of those situations. What was very strange about this one, it was not a play we have never seen before. You know, soft chopper, Tristan Casas hustling, Joe Ryan mishandles the ball, Casas beats it out, and for a second you're like, well, that's cool, right? People love infield hits. People love Tristan Casas inexplicably reaching first base, you know, on a soft chopper to the pitcher. That's fun. And then he, you know, crumples and is on the ground, and you realize, oh no. What was strange about this one in particular is oftentimes when the runner is hustling and trying to reach the base, the injury happens on the plant leg. You know, when they hyperextend, they reach and they land kind of funny on the base, and it's like, oh, that's what happened. What was weird about this is that his right leg initially hits the base, and that looks kind of awkward. He falls, but it was kind of his left leg gets caught again. I know some people were saying that, like, he tripped over Ty France. I didn't see that at all, and it was not by any stretch Ty France's fault whatsoever. But the point is, he goes down. It's kind of strange because you don't know which leg is injured, and then he's holding the left one. You know, the stretcher comes out, and he just looks totally dejected. And it was horrible. I mean, it was really disappointing for a player who, you know, after finishing third in Rookie of the Year a couple years ago, missed a ton of time last year with a serious rib injury, and we're kind of hoping that he could kind of get back to becoming a key part of the Red Sox lineup moving forward. And now he's going to miss the whole season. So it is a ruptured patellar tendon that was confirmed the next day. And now, which is really what I want to talk about here, is what are the Red Sox going to do at first base? Because this was already a roster. And I wrote about this over the weekend, so you can kind of go see the takeaways there and hear what Breslow had to say. But, like, they have this bizarre collection of position players that already didn't really fit together. Some of that because they just don't naturally, and some of that because of the decisions that they've made. And now they're in a situation where they, for now, are saying, we're just going to roll with Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro. And you're like, okay, like, oh, really? Like, is that actually the plan? The obvious first thought for people was like, okay, now can Rafael Devers play first?
So there's
because
two,
why wouldn't he?
There's two lanes here. Mm-hmm. There's two different lanes here. So let's start with Rafi, right? So Rafi Devers, third baseman forever. They sign Alex Bregman. They call up Christian Campbell. That moves him to DH and not to first base because they want to give Tristan Casas a chance. In the world that Tristan Casas retired or didn't exist, Rafi Devers would have been the first baseman on opening day.
I would assume so.
Now you have a situation where that spot is open, and it would make sense to then put Devers over there. There are a couple of reasons why it's more complicated than that. One, teaching him to play first on the fly without a buildup in spring training is difficult, could result in a ton of defensive kerfuffles, and then he could bring that to the plate and it could derail his season. I think that that is a worry, right? The other side of it is that for Devers, they just asked him to move. They just said to him, hey, we're kicking you off third base. Tough luck. Sorry, buddy. This is the big leagues. You're playing DH. You're playing bat. You're playing hit. Yeah. Go play hit.
They said you are the DH. That is what you should focus on. And by the way, that's the reaction so far. Like Cora said, like this weekend, he's the DH. We want him to focus on that. We feel like he's you know, settling into a routine. That is where he belongs. And if you're Devers, you can imagine feeling like, well, you told me I can't use a glove anymore, so I'm going to focus on hitting. So it goes from both ways. You can understand that being the case.
Then there's the Masataka Yoshida part of it, right? Where Masataka Yoshida, who was signed by Chaim Bloom a couple years ago, who is a defensive liability in the outfield, who cannot currently throw a baseball without significant pain, who is a, I would say, a league average hitter, maybe a little bit better. was hitting in spring training. Like was
hitting. Yeah, he played 11 games and was hitting. Like he had shoulder surgery, to be clear, at the end of last season, but is offensively ready to go. But because, again, before the Casas injury, it was like, listen, Devers is our DH. So if you're going to fit onto this roster, you need to be able to throw and play defense. Now, that was already, even if without all this injury and all these other moving around, was already like, okay, well, it still doesn't make any sense as to where he fits because of the Red Sox outfield, which is also quite crowded. But that was the logic. Now you're in a situation where it's like, well, hold on. If we can move Devers to first and have Yoshida back at DH, now we can get back to having, you know, a competent, good, awesome lineup. But that's not what they're going to do, it seems like.
They're not going to do that. And the thing, now they're just going to, it feels like they're burying Yoshida. I remember we went on pod on Lansdowne, Red Sox podcast, to talk about this. Like, we were fascinated. Like, are they just going to pretend like Yoshida doesn't exist? And the answer seems to be yes.
Kind of yes. I mean, the shoulder injury that is limiting him. There? Yeah. So, I mean, again, Breslow talked about it. Chris Cotillo had a really good report about it last week. Like, they are just, this shoulder injury or this not being able to throw is both seemingly very real. Like, it's not like they're telling him he can't throw. I know we were making jokes, like they were basically saying, like, you have to be, you know, they were making it up so that a reason that they wouldn't put it back in the roster. It seems like he's having trouble throwing. Now, at the same time, you could still very realistically say, well, okay, whatever. You just lost Tristan Casas. You need a left-handed bat. He's hitting. He was hitting in BP. He's hitting in spring training. Like, he's able to do that. He was the DH last year for 100 games. Like, just put Devers at first. How hard could it be? But no, they are so set in like, no, this is what needs to happen. But I still push backwards. Like, how does Yoshida fit anyway on this roster? A roster that is going to have to make room for Roman Anthony, the top prospect in baseball at some point, who is demolishing AAA once again and is clearly going to be called up at some point in the next month or so. Like, where does he fit in? What's Duran and Willie Abreu's off of this hot start?
I think they should put Roman Anthony at first base. Now,
okay, Breslow said they're not doing that. So
I understand that Breslow said they're not doing that, and I understand why they're not doing that, right? Because if you have a kid like Roman Anthony who you want to be a cornerstone piece in your outfield for a long time, you don't want to play around with his defensive home, teach him a new position that he's never played on the fly while adjusting to big league pitching, right?
Right.
That I understand. What I would do, I would spend the next, if you're going to keep him in AAA anyway, I would spend the next 3 weeks teaching him how to play first base, see how it goes, and then call him up. Because here's the thing. This is what I think is so bizarre about the Red Sox and frustrating for Red Sox fans. Yoshida and Anthony are both clearly better offensive players than Abraham Toro, Romy Gonzalez, whoever is going to be playing first base moving forward.
Correct.
For both of those facts to exist in the same space has to just be slamming your head against the table type stuff. Now, I understand the long game here. I understand you don't want to mess with Devers and you don't want to like give Yoshida the chance to be good, I guess. And you don't want to toy with Anthony. I get all these reasons, but guess what? You got to go win baseball games today, this season. And because here's the thing, Alex Bregman is playing like a man who's going to opt out.
He's doing his part. Okay? And this is why, well, okay, yes, that is also
that's
fair
what I'm
point.
Saying. Like every sure. year, this is, I believe this so firmly. Every year that you have a chance to be good, to win a World Series, to make a playoffs, to make a run, you owe it to yourself and to the fan base to see that through in its entirety without completely sacrificing the future. Having Rafi Devers play first base or having Roman Anthony play first base is not jeopardizing the 2027 Red Sox in a significant enough way, in my opinion. That's what it comes down to. And if Alex Bregman is going to jet after this year, or Garrett Crochet could, you know, slip on a banana peel, you don't know what's going to happen. You have enough talent today.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
To make it work. And I think rolling with Abraham Toro and Romy Gonzalez at first base, you're doing yourself and your fan base a disservice.
Yeah. I think all that is valid. And the last thing I'll say about the Red Sox is, and then we can flip it over to the Yankees, is that's what's so amazing is that from the start of the offseason, this configuration was compelling. And a lot of the things, the decisions that they were making have been working, right? Bregman looks awesome. Christian Campbell just won Rookie of the Month. Like that, they've been right about some of these things. And now they are in a position, and by the way, they already were in a position to be making some strange decisions because of Yoshida, because of Casas, because of Anthony. Like that was already going to have to happen. I'm going to give Breslow the benefit of the doubt as to what he says the plan is 12 hours after this happens, because you're not playing, right? So it's like, he talks to the reporters. I was there. He says, yeah, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. This is but he says all options are on the table. So we're going to actually see what the plan ends up being, whether that's trading for someone, whether that's whatever. Yeah.
I'm now confused. He said, we're not doing this. And he also said, all options are on the table.
He said all options on the table. He said, we're not considering moving Meyer and Anthony. And then Devers, he was like, I'm not talking about this. And then Cora was like, he's my DH. So, but this is my last big point.
But then not all options are on the table.
Okay. Listen.
You just took some options off the table.
That's the thing. This is my last big point about this. They are going to have to make some sort of decision about multiple players here soon that is compelling for many, many, many reasons. And the evolution of this Red Sox lineup, which was already going to be worth monitoring over the course of the season, regardless of Tristan Casas, now just got that much more interesting. And scoring runs has not been an issue for the Red Sox necessarily. They have scored in every game. They're the only team that can say that. The bullpen is the bigger concern right now with losing these close games. It's not the number one thing, but I do agree with your macro point that they do have enough talent. And even though they're back to being magnetically tethered to 500 like they were at this time last year, I think that they still have a good chance in an AL East that it still appears fairly winnable. And because of that, I look forward to finding out what they actually decide to do here, because with all due respect to the Romy Toro combo, I just don't think that that's what it's going to be. So anyway, Red Sox are weird. Twins, good job winning a series against a team we think is actually decent.
Rays took 2 out of 3 over the Yankees. I was there Friday and Sunday. Freed, unbelievable Friday. Yankees win 3-0. Then you have a close one on Saturday that the Rays eke out after Clark Schmidt is scratched. Volpe also hurts his shoulder. Didn't go on the IL. He's kind of like day-to-day. Didn't play Sunday. Sunday, Will Warren for the Yankees gets absolutely cranked. Yankees come storming back. Very bizarre Aaron Boone decision where you have bases loaded, nobody out, and Austin Wells on the bench with J.C. Ascara up, and Boone lets Ascara hit and grounds into a double play. And then Wells came in and caught the ninth anyway. I don't like pulling apart individual manager decisions in the regular season because it's 162 games. That was a weird one. The two funny things from this, we had tchotchke giveaways at the stadium. There was Jazz Chisholm basketball jersey giveaway on Friday. He is hurt. He did not play. He helped give them away.
Love that.
In front of the
Love
stadium.
Love that for Jazz.
Love that for Jazz. Sunday was Giancarlo Stanton Jedi Star Wars bobblehead day. He obviously did not play. I saw him carrying his bobblehead in the clubhouse, which was great. It made me happy.
Good.
We talked a lot about Aaron Judge and Barry Bonds on our last episode, and we got a lot of very interesting responses about how Judge and Bonds are different. And they're being treated differently. The point that I kind of made is if Judge is hitting like Bonds, he's the closest offensive player to Bonds that we've seen since Bonds. Why is he not being walked like Bonds? And we had a moment in the Saturday game, runners on first and third, 2 outs in a 1-run game in the 8th. Judge up. Bonds is getting walked in that situation.
Like, so what if you're moving a guy another guy in a scoring position?
Like I know you're putting the go-ahead run on second in that situation. Not what the Rays do, right? The Rays decide to pitch to Judge and bring in Edwin Uceta, who's unbelievable.
No, and he was last year.
He gets Judge to ground out, and it's like getting over, right? Like, can you imagine that doesn't happen with Bonds? Now, I asked around about this, and people are basically saying that this is about the game changing and not necessarily about Judge or Bonds, that giving away free bases now is just viewed as not the move. also the difference between San Francisco and New York stadiums, right? So in San Francisco, if I walk Barry Bonds, the odds that the guy behind Bonds is going to BS his way into a homer is very low. If I walk Aaron Judge, we could get a Ben Rice porch pop-up.
Yeah.
That changes things. Also, there are more right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers, so you feel like you have the platoon advantage on Judge more often than you would with Bonds, who is a left-handed hitter. Those are the main arguments I heard. One was that, like, every reliever now is trained to just go at dudes all the time, right, and just let it all out. And I think that that's not how it worked when Bonds was playing. That's another shift in the dynamic. But it's just something that's a great little example of how baseball has changed. The Rays are very weird. The Yankees lost two consecutive division series, and their playoff odds, I believe they're the only team in the AL East whose playoff odds have gone up since the beginning of the year.
So one, just again, the AL East standings, I mean, the Yankees are still in first place, I believe, by a couple games. But if you just break it down, something I've been tracking is just like series victories. Obviously, I track mops and sweeps and whatever. The Rays have actually won the most series of any team in the American League East, which is very confounding because they like have some sweeps mixed in there. Like they've won 6 of their 11 series, and the Red Sox and Yankees have only won 5, and the Blue Jays have only won 4, and the Orioles
have only
are
won
also
2.
A baseball team. They've won 2. So again, it's strange because the Rays are still in third place, but it's, you know, they have gone through stretches where they have rattled off some impressive wins, and I don't know, they are a strange team. But I'm just, man, the Chandler Simpson highlights are just making my day. Whenever it is living up to to the hype that he's finding ways to impact games in all these awesome ways. He is a fast human, I would say.
Faster than me.
Yeah, I would say so. Let's take a break. When we return, we have a lot more baseball to talk about. I know we're 40 minutes into this podcast, but we've got more to cover. So we'll be right back on Baseball Overcast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. There is a moment early in a baseball season when a team with expectations underwhelming everybody at every turn with a record that fans are angry about, and they demand, what do they demand? They demand accountability. They want the GM to speak for their crimes. They want them to go to the baseball Hague. And so what we get in late April, early May, and this happens every year, is the GM talks to the media, usually in the dugout, the home dugout. You don't want it to be too formal, you know, you don't, just in the dugout. Sure. And answers for their sins. This happens most commonly with Brian Cashman. It feels like whenever the Yankees have like a tough 2 weeks, Cashman is like, we like our club. And then they win 93 games, right? And lose in October.
Not as simple for some of these other Pobos. Correct. And GMs.
And we had three of these panic stations meetings on Friday alone. Okay. Mm. Texas.
Good. You
Pobo,
always do. It's always series opener, right?
Series
you
opener. Normally. Friday news dump. Perfect combo.
Sure, sure, sure.
Chris Young, Texas Rangers Pobo. Mike Elias, Baltimore Orioles GM, and Perry Minasian, Anaheim Angels GM. Let's begin in Baltimore, where the can't pitch it at all Orioles pitched it on Friday. Mike Elias talked to the beat and said, I believe in this staff. And Dean Kremer rolls out of bed and throws 7 scoreless in a series opener. Oh, everything's fine.
Yeah. Hey. No. Looking good. I mean, you know, Royals one of the worst offenses in baseball, but who cares? We'll take those shutouts. Go, Dean Kremer, go. Orioles
sure. Well,
win.
Stay tuned after a good Royals win on Saturday, 4-0. Sunday provided one of the wonkiest baseball matches of the season as the Royals clock 7 long balls. The Orioles hit 4 as the Royals storm to, it is the most they've ever hit, the Royals. The most they've ever hit. This was just a dispiriting game for anybody not in Kansas City. Boy, it was like you watch this game and you would think when you see the box score, like, wow, that must have been a fun.
No, not a fun watch. Five different Orioles pitchers allow home runs. For those curious, how is my bold prediction looking? I predicted the Orioles would combine to produce 500 home runs between their pitchers and their hitters. And after this marvelous weekend, they are now up to the top of the leaderboard in most home runs allowed in baseball, which is 51. They've hit 42 themselves in 33 games. That puts them on pace for about 457 combined, which is not 500, but is a pretty good pace considering the weather is going to continue to warm up. The ball will continue to fly a little bit more. I'm feeling good. Also worth noting, Angels and D-backs, also very strong contenders for this. The Angels right now are also on pace. They're on pace for a combined 461 home runs. D-backs also have been giving them up and hitting them over the fence as well. So those are the three teams really to monitor on this road to 500.
Orioles starting pitchers lead baseball with 34 homers allowed. Mets pitchers have allowed, starting pitchers have allowed 8. I don't know how that is possible. Just quickly, Mike Elias, when he talked, big takeaway from what he said was, I have faith in Brandon Hyde. I believe in Brandon Hyde. Brandon Hyde is the man for me. And so now he will either roll forward with Brandon Hyde or have to walk back what he said. Let's move to Anaheim, where Angels GM Perry Minasian addressed the media after the Angels continue their slide. The Tigers beat them 3 out of 4 times. Tigers won again. The Tigers are good. Are they the best team in the American League? I think maybe. They could. They might be, as we did last week. Friday was nut with Kenley allowing 3 homers in the 9th, and Riley Green hit 2 home runs in the 9th inning.
First ever. First in baseball history to have 2 home runs in the 9th inning. The first was off Kenley. The second was off Jake Eater, who I found out was on the Angels. Javier Baez looks awesome. He's like robbing homers in center. He's still batting 9th, but he just looks great. Like, it's just making me happy.
There was a Javier Baez homer in the 9th inning of that game. And it looked like 2017 Javi Baez.
It was like, oh, we're so back. Like, talk about we're so back.
But it did it. It also did it because, like, he swung full Javi Baez effort and the ball got out by, like, 10 feet to left field.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the day, I mean, that's clanging off the upper deck. But
it's like, sure.
Not to yuck a yum. I would say the biggest takeaway from the Angels, sorry, we're bad, Perry Minasian press conference. Was this bizarre exchange he had with Sam Blum, the Angels, the Bob Woodward of Orange County baseball? Sam asked, this is in Sam's article at The Athletic. So does Minasian believe they can be competitive in 2025? Quote, you ask this every time, he said. It was a question he declined to answer with any substance before the season. His answer Friday was similar. Quote, we take it day by day. We'll try to win today's game. We play 162 and see where we're at in the end. The idea that Perry is frustrated with Sam for asking the person who created the baseball team if he thinks the baseball team they built is a good baseball team, that makes no sense to me. Perry, just lie. Just say you think they could be competitive at 2025. Doesn't matter. You're under contract. If you're wrong, what happens? The Angels are bad again? Who cares? Yes, I think we got a chance. I like the guys we got on this team. When you fail to answer the question, you answer the question.
This like here,
watch, watch this. Yeah. Jordan, ask Jordan, am I a good person? Am I a good person?
Yeah, you're a good person.
See, if wait, Jordan
let me
said,
do it like Perry. Let me do it like Perry.
Yeah, do it like Perry. Jordan, am I a good person?
You ask me that every day.
You know, you say, are you a good person? We're just going to wake
why
up every day and win,
me this?
Be a good person that day. No, answer just you. The answer you said here, Perry, is no. You said no. You don't think they could be competitive. If you don't say yes, you're saying no. Anyway,
I just don't understand. Like, remember, they won like 5 series to start the year. Like, not that Perry was like doing a victory lap then, but I don't understand. But don't they're understand. So bad. I don't know what he's supposed. Like, I go back sure. and forth on this because on one hand, yes, this should be the easiest question to answer, even if you don't even believe it. Like, you gotta give something. But being just defensive
say no.
over that is
honestly
is tough.
Say no. Do you think you're gonna be competitive? No, I don't.
No,
we
this
suck.
Is not like this season is about evaluating our players and whatever. That's fine. Like we get it.
The other GM yes. Pobo media addressing was Chris Young in Texas as the Rangers offense. Has been abysmal all year long. They have outplayed that offense somehow. They are only one game under 500. Chris Young did not come with the same type of energy as these other two, you know, oh, long game, everything's going to be okay. Chris Young said, this is not acceptable. And we will make changes if we need to. And changes indeed were made after losing the first two games to the Mariners, who bang. We should talk about them more on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
After losing those first two games with sad offensive performances, they did score a bunch of runs on Sunday and win the last game there. The Rangers fired their offensive coordinator, aka hitting coach, Donnie Ecker, and they put Leotis Taveras on unrevocable waivers. Irrevocable. You can't revoke
him. I mean,
gone. This Leotis is a Taveras. Legitimate. I mean, this is a shakeup. This is qualifies as action taken. All the fans on the tweet machine. Saying, do something. This is something done.
They did something. This is the same guy that was, you know, in charge, in place in this role when the Rangers won the World Series, when they had one of the best offenses in baseball the last 2 years. I mean, we thought they underwhelmed last year. Well, last year they underwhelmed. This year they are bad. This year it is a bad offense, even though it's like mostly the same personnel. It's just has not been good enough, and now they're going to shake it up. Now, what does firing a hitting coach do? What does changing the voice do? Well, if you're the Mariners, you go from totally inept to one of the best offenses in baseball, right? That's what happened last year, where they let go Jarrett DeHart and some of the other guys who's now with the Yankees, and I'm sure Jarrett DeHart is plenty good at his job. But new voice, they got Edgar Martinez in there, they got Kevin Seitzer, Bobby Magallanes, who also comes over from Atlanta, and now the Mariners are raking. Will the Rangers start to hit? I actually did not see who they have replaced him with. I know interim hitting coach is kind of a weird title, so I'm not sure what is actively changing right now in the middle of the season, other than that Donnie Ecker will not be there telling them how to hit.
He kind of looks like Elvis.
Donnie Ecker.
Yeah, it kind of looks a little like Elvis, I think.
Interesting. I'll have to look at that. Anyway, Donnie Ecker, kind of a disappointing trend for him because this was someone who was like interviewing for manager positions. And maybe he will still be a manager in the future, but it does not seem like that will be in Texas. But yeah, Mariners take 2 of 3. They win their 8th series in a row. And we should probably talk about their offense because it's kind of unbelievable. And
we should do a whole pod on it on Wednesday because we do get to do 3 of these a week. If you, the listener, don't think our podcasts are good enough and you want us to address the media, I guess that is all we do is address the media. But, you know, we'll face the fire. We'll hop in the flames.
I don't know who our hitting coach is, but we're willing to consider all options. If we're
firing
not good
me.
all right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we throw it into turbo mode. We still have 9 more series to talk about. Oh, my goodness. We'll be right back on Baseball Broadcast.
And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. 9 series left. Let's sink our teeth into 2 of them and throw the rest in turbo mode. Cubs over the Brewers in the Midwest battle. Every year, there's discourse about Cubs fans taking over Milwaukee and Brewers fans saying that they're not. And I want to go do that one year and get a sense of the Midwestern spice.
Sure. But what was not... I mean, you could not argue that what happened this weekend was the Cubs being like, hey, we're a better baseball team than the Brewers. 2 more,
you know,
PCA homers on Friday.
You know who else seems to think the Cubs are a better baseball team than the Brewers?
Pat Murphy.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Now, hey, credit to the Brewers. They shut the Cubs out on Sunday. Only the second time the Cubs have been shut out. Freddie Peralta was great. Imanaga leaving with seemingly not an arm injury. But PCA, you know, 3 more homers over the weekend. Cubs dominate 10-0 Friday, 6-2 on Saturday. Jose Quintana finally loses as a Brewer. But this Patrick Murphy, yes, I'm calling him Patrick. This Pat Murphy quote about the Cubs after their win on Sunday is so, I mean, it's just like, I don't really know how to describe this other than like, if you told me that, if you showed me this quote and got rid of the names, even though he doesn't really say a lot of names, which is part of why this quote is so funny. But if you somehow took out the context clues, I think I would be able to tell this was Pat Murphy.
Pat Murphy is a top five character in baseball. That I have been in Pat Murphy manager meetings, like with the media, I will remember them forever.
Yes.
And I don't
There's
cover
nothing
the
like
birds.
Them.
There's nothing like them. He is the best. He is a real person. He is interesting. There's no BS. And here is the quote. It's after they win on Sunday. Quote, "We shut out one of the best offensive teams in baseball, if not the best. They're solid through and through. They're just old enough, just experienced enough. Their young guys are at the peak of their game. The blue-haired kid is kind of a freak right now with the way that he's playing. The new kid with the huge feet. That kid, what a hitter. I just notice him when he's digging in the box. Like, God, it's him. What a hitter." Then he goes on to shout out a number of other players and whatever. But to refer to Pete Armstrong, a top 10 player in the world right now, as the blue-haired kid, which is true, and to describe Kyle Tucker as the new kid with the huge feet. I mean, wow, that's great.
Kyle Tucker's been around. I know, especially, he's played against. I know Kyle Tucker is now in the division for the first time, but
sure.
I'm pretty sure Pat Murphy has managed against Kyle Tucker at least a couple times in the last
Calling
few
him
years,
the new
but it doesn't
kid.
Matter.
The
new
kid,
kid. With the huge feet. But it's so true. And
the
then
new
he does
kid
name,
with
that's
huge
the best
feet
part. Right.
Is about but, to receive what? $600 million?
Right, exactly. So just Murph is so funny. But anyway, he's also clearly being like, yeah, the Cubs are really good. So
yeah.
He understands that. And that is we'll see if they can keep cooking. Sure seems that way.
Last series you want to talk about a little bit. Dodgers over Braves. This was the Sunday Night Baseball. Dodgers take the first two. Weird rain delay day on Saturday.
Yeah, 3-hour rain delay, which means they did not start until 10:15 local time. Seems like they were committed to getting this game in. And it was kind of unfortunate because like Roky Sasaki versus Spencer Schwellenbach in like prime time would have been a great matchup. And they did end up pitching. Schwellenbach was just not very good. He got crushed. And Roky was fine. I mean, he got his first career win, which is great. The velo was a little bit down a little bit, but career high 97 pitches, goes five innings. That's fine. I won't nitpick Roky on this one. The story of this one was that Schwellenbach was not very good. Hye-Sung Kim got called up, which is exciting. Tommy Edman is hurt. That is not exciting. But Kim had been playing well in AAA, so now he's kind of a part of this Dodgers position player group. And then on Sunday Night Baseball, Austin Riley hits two homers. Bryce Elder was pretty good. And then Raisel Iglesias, it was not. It got dicey again at the end, but the Dodgers. I know Padres fans are like, hey, talk about the Dodgers bottom of the lineup. It's like, yeah, valid. We got Austin Barnes up there with the game on the line, which is not awesome. So the Braves managed to salvage one on Sunday.
All-time tweet for Bob Nightingale. Put it in the hall. Bob Nightingale tweeted, Atlanta outfielder Alex Verdugo will make ESPN history tonight by being mic'd up with his third different team on Sunday Night Baseball with Atlanta hosting the Dodgers. Does he have stats on that? Like, someone
Does
must
he
have
just remember
this to Bob.
Every yeah,
he
right.
must have just
this
got a text.
Had to have been ESPN PR being like, Verdugo's mic'd up again, baby.
Or maybe Bob is just a spreadsheet nut like you, and he just has.
He's tracking ESPN mic'd up appearances. That is great too, because it's Has anyone done it with two teams? I mean, like, this is got to be a pretty small sample of players that have done this. But anyway, good series win for the Dodgers. Braves, I still don't really know what to make of, to be honest. Yamamoto also, I know we glossed over that. His ERA is what, like 0.6 right now? I think he has just been unbelievable. So Dodgers continue, and you're going to see them. You're going to see the Dodgers in Miami this week.
Yeah, that's why I'm here in Miami to see the Dodgers. Now, their probable starters for my time in Miami are
Kasperius, I think.
Kasperius, Gonsolin, bullpen day.
All right. Hey, that's what you get from the Dodgers in the middle of the week. It's they're honestly like it's like a college program.
It is Yamamoto, like a college program, right?
Yamamoto's the Friday night guy. Duh. Roki on Saturday, like, should he be on Saturday versus Sunday? And it's worth, Glasnow was pitching like a Sunday starter, I should say. But now it's like the midweek. They got their midweek guys. Dude. So
let's talk about this more on Saturday, on Wednesday. But Tyler Glasnow is in a, some, this is weird. Like, there's no injury. Well, there's no official injury.
And Blake Snell also. We're just like,
what did I tell you? What did I tell you when Blake Snell went in the IL? Do you remember? You were like, oh, I was like, no chance he's back in 2 months.
Yes, you're acting like I was, you know, standing up and saying Blake Snell will be back soon. Like, but that's true. You were like, this is just gonna linger.
Like, this
in
is
ways
gonna take longer than people think.
That's fair. So anyway, Dodgers. Also, but hey, can't beat them on Friday.
You have the best record in baseball.
The Dodgers?
The Dodgers.
Do they really? Because
they
Mets
were on a W7 before last night. They just like, you like blink and they have like 8 wins in a row. It's amazing. 7 wins. They're amazing.
Oh my
they're
gosh. So and I guess they did just play the Marlins and now they're going to play the Marlins again. So that will probably remain the case. All right. We have 7 series left. It's time to go fast. Get ready, folks. Buckle up. We're going turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
The Cleveland Guardians take 2 of 3 over the Toronto Blue Jays north of the border. Jose Ramirez gets hurt on Friday, but he's back on Sunday. Don't worry. On Saturday, Bo Bichette hits his first homer of the season, but that is overshadowed by the Daniel Schneemann game. He has 4 of his hardest hit balls of his career, including 2 homers, a go-ahead grand slam off Jimmy Garcia, 2 outs in the 9th. He has another big hit on Sunday as the Gardos unleash their classic recipe of Bibee to Heron to Smith to Gattis to Clase, and Clase looks kind of good.
Confusing. Sure. Closers. Cardinals take 2 out of 3 over the Mets. Pete homers on Friday and the Mets win. We get a rain out on Saturday, which means a doubleheader on Sunday. Ball players hate a Sunday doubleheader. I mean, they're trying to get out of Dodge. Game 1 was a MLB debut for Blade Tidwell, who was not great. Has to be the first Blade.
Yeah. I think we've had some Blades in the minors, but welcome to the first Blade in Major League history.
I need him to get traded to the Giants so that he can be Bay Blade. In game 2 on Sunday, Cardinals win 5-4. Unreal robbery from Victor Scott of Juan Soto to keep that game where it was. Cards get revenge for the mop that they suffered in Queens a couple weeks ago.
Chicago White Sox take 2 out of 3 over the Houston Astros. That third game was only 7 innings thanks to rain, but the White Sox will take every win that they could get. Good news for the Astros, though. Jake Myers has a career game on Saturday, going 4 hits, 2 homers, a double, and a triple, 7 RBIs. Hunter Brown was great again, and Lance McCullers is back. I know the Astros lost that game, but if we're just talking pure stuff that we enjoy watching, Lance is still near the very top of the list. And it looked like Lance McCullers. I know the command isn't there right now. Who cares? He hasn't pitched in like almost 3 years, and now he's back, and that is a big deal for the Houston Astros, although losing a series to the White Sox under basically any circumstance is no bueno.
Yeah, you still have to go sit in timeout in the corner, in the naughty corner. Shout out. I think that was Super Nanny. Nationals taking 2 out of 3 over the Reds. Last weekend when the Reds swept the Rockies, we made it about the Rockies and not the Reds, and here's why. I will say Mackenzie Gore, it's happening. It's happening very slowly, and the ERA is higher than you'd want, but he is leading baseball in strikeouts. He was sensational again on Sunday. Hunter Green was great on Friday. It is just, it's cool to see this next generation of starting pitchers kind of grab a hold of what they were supposed to be. And for Green and Gore, two guys who did not come up immediately and dominate, who had to kind of work into the promise they showed in the minors. Cool to see that happening.
Well said, Reds. Come on, let's see you beat a good team. The Giants take 3 out of 4 over the Rockies as the Rockies continue to have one of the worst starts in baseball history. We got some good stuff from Robbie Ray, got some good stuff from Matt Chapman. Willie Adames hits 2 homers on Sunday. That was much needed for Giants fans who've watched Willie get off to a slow start. The Rockies are 6-28 with a -89 run differential. They're on pace to win 29 games. Remember, the White Sox only won 41 a year ago. The Rockies have lost all 11 series so far this year.
29 wins.
Not a lot of wins. It's not a lot.
That's like a 1958 ace would used to win 29 games.
That's are how many wins do the Dodgers have? They have 23 already. So there you go.
Amazing. The A's, 2 out of 3 over the Marlins in what was not the series of the weekend from a viewership perspective. However, there was an epic one on Saturday. Crazy Marlins comeback. Kyle Stowers, 2 home runs in that game, including a walk-off grand slam opposite field off of Mason Miller on a 102-mile-an-hour fastball. Kyle Stowers, who the Marlins got from the Orioles in the cataclysmic Trevor Rogers trade. He has been sensational for them recently. A's do win the kicker on Sunday. I am really excited to see Marlins Park the next couple of days. I have not been there since the All-Star game.
Oh, quick note on the A's. They are only 2 games behind the Mariners, and they welcome Seattle to Sacramento for 3 games starting tonight. Oh, my gosh. The A's could be in first place when we speak later this week. We'll see. Last series, Phillies over the Diamondbacks. The Phillies take the first 2. Jesus Luzardo continues to look awesome. Max Kepler kind of heating up for the Phillies, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
Aaron Nola, best start of the year on Saturday. 6 scoreless, was up to like 94, which is good for Aaron Nola. Corbin Burns is hurt. Don't love that for the D-backs, but they do manage to win on Sunday. Ranger Suarez's season debut was not awesome. Phillies had a big comeback late, but they still end up losing in extras because the D-backs bang, as we know. Can they pitch? Doesn't really seem like it, but they are going to score enough runs to win a good number of games.
I'm not right a whole lot, but I was so low on this rotation coming into the year, and they are 24th in rotation ERA right now.
And if Corbin Burns is like seriously injured, that will be a longer conversation that we can have later this week. But for now, we are done. We have talked about all the baseball from the weekend. Thank you to TJ Brassel for producing. We appreciate you, TJ. Thank you for listening. We will be back on Wednesday. Jake will report from the Fightin' Fish. Let us know how they are looking against those Dodgers who just so
Marlins lost
the best
again.
Record of baseball. Hey, come on now. Marlins.
They've had
some fun wins at home. So we'll see if they can grab a couple against the Dodgers.
Seriously, this Marlins team is more exciting than we thought they would be. That's a good thing.
I think it is plausible they could finish in 4th. I hope not, because I think that the Nats have way more talent and they should finish in 4th. But it is now not completely inconceivable.
Correct.
That the Marlins can finish in 4th. But anyway, on that note, Nats fan producer Colin Brennan, sorry I finished the pod with that. And to my brother. Thank you all for listening. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We will talk to you all on Wednesday. Goodbye.